have started.
Hi, thank you so much. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the RPM TMCH sub-team meeting on the 19th of August at 1500 UTC. On the call today, we have Grace Nkanu, Jeff Newman, Susan Payne, Kathy Kleiman, Edward Morris, Christine Durain, and Philip Corwin, who has just joined us. We do have apologies from Kurt Pritt. From staff, we have David Tate and myself, Michelle DeSmiter. I would like to remind you all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you. I'd like to turn the call over to David Tate.
Thank you, Michelle. Good afternoon, everyone. Unfortunately, Mary Wong isn't with us this morning, or this afternoon, or this evening, depending on who you are, as she's traveling. So I propose just to stick with the agenda as it's drafted at the moment, unless there's any issues with that immediately. And I'll just proceed by pulling up the first document for agenda item 2, which is the review of the updated tabular summary of TNCH's data to identify any gaps and additional questions, and propose to just go through that in the order it will be on the screen. That tabular document was drawn together by staff at the request of the working group last week to try and provide an easier to understand and digest model of the data that we've collected to date. That document is now unsynced. So what I would propose to do, unless there are any objections, is to, and I see that Mary's joined us, is to just go through that document page by page, unless anyone has an alternative to that.
David, this is Kathy. I have a question.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi, David. The document we were working on last week, what's the status of that? Did I miss an update on that? The one that had kind of the compilation of publicly available documents and what, you know, a summary of what was in them.
Thanks for that, Kathy. And Mary, who pulled most of this together, has her hand up, so I'll hand the chair over the floor over to you.
Thanks, David, and thanks, Kathy, for the question. I hope my connection's fine because I'm actually in Singapore at the moment. So, Kathy, this is an updated document in the sense that we tried to fill in some of the gap last week, which was just an initial sweep through what we had at the time. What we've since done is still use the publicly available data, but what you see here in the table, for example, under Section 1, PMCH data, is we went back through all the statistics that were published by the TMCH on their website and tried to fill it out with the, I guess, approximate time periods as we said we would do last week. So the point is that this is publicly available information, a tabular form that would be more helpful for the working group and the sub-team. And the same is true for the other sections of this document.
So, Mary, this is a replacement of the document we were looking at last week? I'm just trying to understand documents in transition.
In it, it be formatted, and there's been more information put in. Yeah, so it looks very different because we put in more information and we put it in a different format.
But it is the replacement of the document we were looking at last week. It's a complete substitute. We won't be going, the plan is not to go back to that original document.
If the sub-team would like to go back to that, we can. It's just that this is, this, in our view, supersedes it because it fills it out with more information.
Okay, appreciate it. I will review it in that light. I thought it's very useful information. And next time we swap out a document, just flag it and that would be great because I kept looking for the older document as well. But thanks so much. Clearly, a huge amount of work went into this. I look forward to the walkthrough. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary and Kathy. So with that in mind, this is David Take, again, for the record. I propose that we begin that walkthrough with this document, allocating perhaps around 20, 25 minutes to that before we move on to the next point. So turning to page one, the high-level summary of the TH data. Now, obviously, this document was circulated yesterday, so we may not have had the chance to digest all of it yet. But as you see, we've ranged the data from March 2013 up to April 2016. And what we have there are the number of marks submitted, number of jurisdictions, percentage by trademark submitted by trademark agents, percentage verified, percentage of multi-year registrations, the number of trademark notices sent, the number of ongoing notices sent, and the number of expired marks. Again, picking up from one of the requests by Kathy last week, you'll notice at the bottom, this data has been referenced back to the original source, which is Deloitte, so that we can trace that back through. And essentially, this is a sort of by calendar month high level overview of the data that we've collected. Susan, you've got your hand up.
Yes, thanks, David. It's just a quick question. I'm assuming these are cumulative figures for all of it. So where it's got expired marks and there's 4,938 in April 2016, that's in total. That's not how many expired in 2016, I'm assuming.
Mary, you've got your hand up to reply.
I do, and Susan, I think that's a good question. We just took the data from what was available on the website, and so we assumed that it was some kind of cumulative figure, but it's something we can certainly check back with Deloitte about.
Okay, thanks. I mean, I think it would be helpful just so that we're all clear. It certainly looks cumulative to me, but I think perhaps it was, you know, we ought to be absolutely certain, I think.
Kathy, you've got your hand up.
Yeah, follow up to Susan's question. Could you define what an expired, or did TMCH define what an expired mark is? I'm assuming it means that it expired in the TMCH, not that somehow it expired as a trademark, but we should maybe asterisk that and define it. Also, I was wondering if you saw anything about canceled marks. There've been certainly been a famous canceled mark in the United States during the period of the TMCH, and it would be interesting to know if it was canceled. It was canceled in the U.S. Trademark Office. It would be interesting to know if it was canceled in the Trademark Clearinghouse, assuming it was there. But to the question of expired marks, are we talking about expired trademarks or expired TMCH registrations?
So this is Mary again. Yes, I do. Kathy, I don't think that we as staff know the answers to that. What we did was basically use the information and terminology from the TMCH. And so they spoke about expired marks, and we assumed that that meant expired for TMCH purposes, not for national or regional registration purposes. Similarly, there was no information that we could get from the website on canceled marks. My assumption is that they don't reflect cancellations in national offices unless in some way it also affects the TMCH record. Thanks.
Then I'll recommend for our questions, this is Kathy, quick follow-up. For our questions area, can we supplement the questions right now? I know that's a different document, but can we put some notes in for the questions?
Kathy, David here. Yes, absolutely. We're keeping a running mark of the notes, you know, on the right-hand side in the notes box, so we can add
that. Okay, if we could add the question, how is expired mark defined? and how are marks canceled in the national registries handled at the TMCH level? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. See, all this data is bringing up great questions. I'll put my hand down.
Okay. You've got your hand up now, if you'd like.
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff Newman. Probably, so we don't go through this with everyone, let's just make sure that, you know, we define, like, everything should be defined. I think that's probably a ongoing question to or comment. But in the number of marks submitted, again, I would assume that's trademarks, but what we should be clear on is the number of labels that have been generated from those marks. So some of them, you're able to have multiple labels associated with those marks, especially if the marks have characters in there that aren't recognized or if there's been a UDRP action or other. So can we clarify that those are the number of trademarks that have been submitted and not necessarily the number of labels on the SLD, the names list that's sent out? Does that make sense? Does everyone understand? Yeah, Mary, cool. Thanks, Mary.
Kathy, per the definitions, jurisdictions, is that a national term or something else? The number of jurisdictions. So when we see 121, are we talking about countries or regions? Does any, not just for Mary and David, does anybody know the answer on that one? Thanks.
While Susan is typing, Kathy, and while others jump in, we do not have visibility into that at the moment because we're just basically scraping the data that is on the website, and it might be something to check. But again, the terminology that we use is what they use, and they say number of jurisdictions, which is, I believe, the terminology they've used in all their public presentations. But, yes, it doesn't specify country or region.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, this is Jeff Newman. I was just going to say, Susan's put it into the chat. It's either country or other jurisdiction like the EU or African Union or others where you can have collective marks. So jurisdiction is a field that's in the application for the to enter your market to the clearinghouse. It says what's the jurisdiction of the trademark, and if it was the United States, you put U.S. If it's in Europe, you could either put the country or the EU or whatever.
Okay, so while I'm – so, Jeff, let me follow up, or Susan. So I might jump to the conclusion that 121 countries have registered – you know, people from 121 countries or corporations have registered. That's not really the case. It could be Benelux and EU. We could be really looking at overlapping countries. So we'd have to go deeper to know – really how far and wide the trademark clearinghouse is going. We have to dig a little deeper then. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Jeff Newman. I think that's right, but there's not that many jurisdictions that are collective. There's a few, but yes, we do need to dig a little deeper into that.
Could I?
Susan,
I was just going to leap in as well, Susan. Just responding to what Kathy was saying, I'm reading that and assuming that's the jurisdiction of the trademark. It's not necessarily where the company who owns the mark is based. I don't know that it doesn't necessarily matter. I don't know that anything turns on it necessarily, but just so we're clear, I don't think this is about necessarily where the mark owner is incorporated.
good point, Susan. This is Kathy. I guess what I was thinking is, so like in the RDS, when we say 121 countries have data protection laws, if we were to say that, we would be showing something across the world here, and so I kind of jumped to that, and here I'm not sure it means the same thing. So we're looking at jurisdictions, but it sounds like I could have a trademark in the UK and France and Benelux and in the EU, and those would all be counted as different jurisdictions. Is that right?
Yes. They'd all be counted as different jurisdictions, but I'd say it wouldn't be many cases where a company would submit multiple trademarks. I'm sure there must be occasions when they have, but if you'd got the same mark in a number of different countries, you don't get a great deal of benefit from putting it in the trademark clearinghouse more than once, and you have to pay. So that's why, for example, there's a preponderance of usage of U.S. marks and community trademarks, European community trademarks, for example, because you wouldn't put the community trademark in and the UK mark, because there would be no point.
That makes sense, but it still sounds like we need more data to understand the geographic reach, perhaps, of the trademark clearinghouse. And I guess I'm just trying to get my head around kind of what the next set of questions might be. So just thanks for the explanation. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you for that discussion, everyone. So returning back to the page one, are there any comments or gaps that are noticed, aside from those that we've had raised, in relation to the sort of high-level tabular map that we've got in at the moment? That being the case, then we will move to page two, which is deals with some of the supplementary information in the analysis group's draft report on the 25th, from the 25th of July this year. Christine, if you'd like.
Hi, thanks, Christine from Amazon Registry. I think that this data is a little bit, sort of looking back at what we were just discussing on page one as far as jurisdictions and where the marks are being submitted from. I think this data starts to head in that direction. I think where the data becomes obscured is when we're talking about the trademark clearinghouse agents and the number of companies that use trademark clearinghouse agents, and whether or not it's possible to get a breakdown of the, sort of the where the corporate headquarters of the businesses that use trademark clearinghouse agents are located. Just to get a sense, I think, back to Kathy's point of sort of what's the reach and then how far are they going? Because if you've got a, let's say you've got a U.S.-based trademark clearinghouse agent who's submitted, 500 trademark clearinghouse records, the U.S.-based trademark clearinghouse agent would not have necessarily only done work for U.S. companies. I would think that anybody could use that trademark clearinghouse agent. So unless my assumption there is mistaken, I think one of the things we need to drill down into is trying to figure out the corporate headquarters or location of the entities actually submitting marks.
Susan, Christine, we've noted that down as an issue to explore. Susan, you.
Yes. I realize this is just this is a sort of gathering of information that we know, and so this might be the wrong point to ask this question. But what is it that we are trying to determine, and why, if we are looking at where people were based when they put marks in the trademark clearinghouse? I don't know how to ask this question. I'm just conscious that, I mean, there may be questions around sort of kind of competition and usefulness and so on. But I think probably isn't it that the kind of thing that the CCTRT should and is looking at? And I mean, we're looking at whether the RPMs have been effective in, I guess maybe that's why we're looking at whether the RPMs have been effective in safeguarding rights owners' rights. And so I suppose if we're only addressing the rights of some countries, I guess that is a relevant point. I'm talking and it's, I'm making my own mind up as I'm talking. Sorry.
Thanks, David, and thanks, Susan. So I think I had a similar question to yours in the chat, Susan, as in we probably want to be clear on the purposes for which we want either more specific data or additional data. And on your point about the CCTRT, my understanding is that they're still in the data gathering phase. And internally among staff, we have some coordination meetings. I don't know at this point how much specificity they're going into with respect to this kind of information. We'll do our best to make sure that, A, we find out, and that, B, we're not duplicating their effort. Thanks.
Thank you, Mary. And unless there are any questions on page 2, any further questions we say on page 2, then I suggest we move on to page 3 and Sunrise transactions and the data that we've collected on that.
So could I ask a question? It's Susan here, sorry. This is really helpful, having these Sunrise transactions, but it's very conscious that the data goes up to only May 2015. How easy is it to update that information? I know when we've been looking for this, when I've been looking for this information, it's not really readily available, although I presume the TMCH has it. So is it something that can be brought up to date?
Hi, Susan. David Tate here. Yes, I think it's my understanding that we're hopefully going to have access to that data. All of that data is hopefully, the trademark clearinghouse data is hopefully going to be coming online within the next 2 to 3 weeks. And hopefully that will all be there. However, we're just waiting for that, for Deloitte to finalise the distribution process for that.
So, David, can we add that to the notes for page 2 on the right side, updating to as close to present as possible? Because this is great data, and jumping ahead to the next page, the table that you've created so that we can see what was rolled out when. Right now, the rollout takes us to May 2015, so .bank, .express, .site, .tech. but so much more has happened. So it'll be really cool to bring this table on monthly Sunrise transactions up to speed or up to the turn of the, you know, to, up to January or something like that. I think that'll give us a lot of information. Thank you.
Thanks, Kathy. Yes, that's not a problem for us to do. We'll make sure that we have that for the most up-to-date publicly available data as soon as we've got it. Kathy, you've still got your hand raised. Is there a second point you'd like?
Sorry, David. Old hand, and thank you very much. Appreciate it. This is really good stuff. And I'm assuming. Let me just double check that this is just our first pass on it. As we're kind of listening to your overview and taking, you know, what maybe a first look for some of us or a second look for some of us, so that we're gonna circle back to some of this next week. This is kind of the start. Is that what you and Mary envision?
Mary, if you'd like to respond.
Sure, and sorry, my hand shot up because David, I think you should have responded to that. But so, Kathy, I think that's kind of what we're looking for from the sub-team, as David mentioned at the start of the call, whether there are any obvious gaps that you folks see with what we have and whether there's any additional information that is not here that we should be getting. So not necessarily a gap, but just things that could help fill out. What we can say is that for the table that you saw on page 1 and what is now on page 3, all that is information that is on the TMCH website, so we've pulled from that. And in that regard, I'm not sure how much more we can pull from that since it's already out there. That's why we're looking for guidance in terms of gaps of data that is not there at all, as well as additional data that is not there but that would be helpful.
Understood. That's helpful to know. Thank you.
Thank you both. So moving on to Susan, you've got your hand raised.
All right. One thing I think might be useful, I'm not certain, but it might be useful for us when we've got the data to have a bit of an understanding of which ones of the of the TLDs that had launched were subject to a DML block. I don't know. I mean, it may be that it's getting into too granularity, but it seems to me that it impacts on, if we're trying to work out what percentage of Sunrise registrations per TLD or number of Sunrise registrations, average number per TLD. Some TLDs are not going to necessarily have as many Sunrise registrations because they're subject to a DPML block. Oh, I'm cutting out.
Mary, you've got your hand.
I do, and Susan, even though you cut it, I think I got the gist of what you were saying. I think the question from the staff side is we don't know, and not that we've dug deeply into this, but we don't actually know at this point what kind of accurate information we could get about the DPML or any other sort of list that individual registries might be running. So we might know that certain registries are running certain lists. I don't know, A, that we might get that sort of information from them to the level of granularity that might be helpful, and B, whether or not we can even get that information. We can try, but here's where I think some guidance from the team would be useful. And certainly we can go and talk to Donuts, for example, but we would be grateful for any specific and certainly any specific instruction as to what data we're looking for.
Kathy, you've got your hand.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's too granular. I'm hoping it's not too granular to gather. It would be really useful to know as much as we can about the DPML because it is using the TMCH resources. It is using ICANN resources. And so it is related to the work that we're doing. I think as much information as we can gather would be useful. So the question, I guess, might be what's public about the DPML and then whether how we get more information if there's not enough information that's public to help us evaluate it. And I think to Christine's point, why not? I think that's a great idea. But should we be inviting donuts to talk to us or to the full working group at whatever point we get there? Just thinking aloud of what we said about kind of hitting the same parties up twice. I don't know the answer. I'm just raising, truly, truly raising the question.
Maybe you've got your hand up too.
Actually, I had my hand up to ask the exact same question that Christine did. And Kathy, to your point, I think my initial reaction as staff support is that if we're just looking for what the DPML comprises and what kind of specific information regarding data Donuts is willing to share with the full working group, that is a conversation that sub-team can have with Donuts. So it's very similar to what we did in the analysis group. It's a very specific focus on data formats, what's available, what's not available, and we report back to the full working group. So if that's something that sub-team would like to know, we can try to, you know, reach out to the Donuts folks maybe for next Friday. And as Susan said, numbers of DPMLs and whether we're able to drill down, it's to us that if we can have that conversation with the Donuts folks and see what they can tell us, that might tell us something about what other registries might or might not be willing to share, and it might give us a little bit of a head start in trying to define the sort of granular information on this account that we might be looking for. So if that's fine, as David's put in the notes, Mary, we can reach out to Donuts about DPML.
Okay, so you're not inviting Donuts onto the call next Friday. You're trying to get data from Donuts that we might be able to take a look at by next Friday. Is that right?
Actually, it was the other way around. It seems to us as staff that it might be more effective if Donuts was able to be on the call so that individual members can ask all the questions that you feel might be appropriate. That doesn't mean we wouldn't have other registries on other calls, either the sub-team or the full working group. But since Donuts is one of the largest registries and it did come out very early with the DPML, it might give us some sense of the sort of questions and direction we might want to go with respect to other registries. So, in short,
I'm not sure that that's a great idea. With the analysis group, there was a report, so there was something to respond to. In this case, we don't know what's publicly available from Donuts or what might be privately available for on request. So, can I suggest, so I'm not even sure where to start the questions, because I'd hate to ask something that was easily available on a Google search or from materials that they would be like, sure, we have this report. Go ahead and take it. So can I suggest that we actually gather the data first, take a look at it, and then that would give us some basis for thinking through maybe, you know, more well-developed questions. I think having them on the call next week is a little premature, but that's my thought. I'm welcome, you know, I'm happy to hear other people's thoughts.
Christine, you've got your hand up.
Hi, Christine from Amazon Registry. You know, we have, you know, several questions that we want staff to answer before next week, and maybe one of the questions we can add to the list is look and see what publicly available information is available for DPML. I think the answer, just given my history and what I do for a living, is going to be almost nothing. I think that when I come at it from a registry perspective, being asked to provide, you know, written data in the form of spreadsheets, et cetera, is going to be, A, time-consuming, and, B, I'm going to raise an eyebrow. But if you invite me onto a call to sort of ask me general questions about the program, gather some gentle gathering of information, and I'm not talking about prodding or prying. I mean, they'll give out what they can or they won't. And using that to sort of guide our question asking, I mean, they may come back and say, sorry, it's our proprietary information. We're a company. We don't have to tell you anything. And then that's it. That's the end of the conversation. But perhaps what they can do in having a come back and forth conversation with donuts, if they're willing to talk to us, would be to say, but hey, this is one of the things we considered, or, you know, this is why we didn't do X when we put together our DPML, or this is why we didn't do Y, or this is why we chose to do, you know, this other thing. You know, we might be able to gather some side information that there's no way we could anticipate from just doing a public records search. So I don't really have a problem, because it looks like we've given staff a lot to do for next Friday. I don't have a problem with adding to the list, see what's available for DPMLs before we invite donuts. But I think the answer is going to be nothing. And I think that we do have a lot of value in having a friendly conversation, just sort of helping direct us, and then allowing them to say, yep, we're willing to provide X, we're willing to provide, you know, this or that, or, but we're not willing to provide this other information. So I think to that extent, we actually we have the possibility of getting more information if we actually have a friendly conversation. That's, I guess, my opinion. And I can't speak for donuts. I don't know if they'll even give us anything.
Thanks, Christine. I know that in the chat, Kathy and Phil tend towards the idea that it's better to get an idea of what Donuts has and is willing to share prior to a call in order to make it as maximally productive as possible. Mary's got her hand up.
So this is Mary from, and I guess I'm just trying to figure out what the due diligence is that we need to do, because we, like I said in the chat, we haven't been able and such using the DPML model. Much less numbers. So I guess we're
Was I the only one who just lost Mary?
No, Kathy, I think
I don't hear
that
her
happened.
Okay, alas.
Yeah, I think what I heard, though, before she went away, Christine, again, I think what I heard her saying is she's just trying to figure out, from staff's perspective, what their specific direction is before next Friday. If the answer is we're not going to try to invite donuts for next Friday, then we need to tell them that. If we're going to try to do some additional research before we invite them, that's fine. I think we just have to know what research we want staff to do and give them the specific direction. I think that was the taking from her before I lost her completely.
Thanks, Christine. Just to pick up on that, yes, I think that is, on behalf of staff, that is what we would hope that the subcommittee might be able to provide us, is perhaps a little bit, if we're not to be tasked to go and ask Donuts to meet with us next week for some specific topics or information that you would like us to seek them in advance to deliver that due diligence that Kathy's looking for.
Guys, I think we're getting, I know we've been talking about DPML. I think we're getting off topic. I wouldn't dive into the DPML yet. We're still working on this material, on the TMCH. The DPML is, there are a lot of questions about the DPML. It's not just Donuts that's using it. Minds and Machines is using a variation of DPML. There's a lot of questions I think we need to get our hands around, and we have no material for it. So for, you know, Jeff, I know you live and breathe this, you know, all the time, but the rest of us, I would much prefer to have some time and not do this in the dead of summer and go through, get the TMCH material, go through that analysis, and then go off on other tangents. And it is a tangent. It's a very important tangent, but it is a tangent of DPML a little later. Kind of getting hands around one topic at a time would, frankly, be very useful to me, especially in the dead of summer. Thanks.
Susan, you've got your hand up.
I wanted to just quickly respond. I don't agree, Kathy, that this is a tangent at all. The DPMLs will rely on the Trademark Clearinghouse SMD files. You had to have your mark in the TMCH in order to apply for a block. So the utilization of the TMCH for the blocks is incredibly important, and it's data that's completely intrinsic to what we're doing, and it's not a tangent at all. It's also something that I'm afraid that no one seems to be trying to investigate, so that the analysis report, for example, completely failed to address this. And I think it's really important and not a tangent.
Susan, thanks for your response. That makes perfect sense. But does it also make sense that for those of us who don't really live and breathe this every day, getting our hands around one topic at a time. Let's finish our work on the publicly available data of the TMCH, the questions we're putting together. We're also doing the PDDRP at the same time. Does it make sense that we kind of, there are only so many topics to kind of take up at a time? I'd love to do the DPML. I want to do some more research, and you know, I believe it. If Jeff says there's only one piece of data out there, then there's only one piece of data out there. But maybe someone else has done some kind of discussion or review or interviewed John Nevitt or something. Like to get just some more information on the DPML, who else is using a similar concept, so that I have, you know, so that there's a better basis of asking questions. Again, the analysis group had a report, so there was a basis, and, you know, thank you for pointing out that the analysis group didn't deal with this, but kind of only so many topics on the front burner at a time would be really, really useful for those of us in multiple working groups. Thanks.
I guess I just don't agree. I recognize we can't dive in deeply into an analysis of the DPML and its effectiveness. I think that's a topic, just as, say, an analysis of Sunrise is a topic. But at the moment, we're the data gathering vanguard, and we need a bit of data. Otherwise, we can't do anything with it.
Christine, you can.
Hi, this is Christine. Okay, I'm going to propose a way forward because I have to jump off the call in 5 minutes to get to another meeting, so sorry about that. I'm going to propose and run, so I'll check later. I'm going to suggest that we, like I said before, we've given staff a whole bunch of stuff to look at. Let's sit on this for 1 week. Come back when we talk next week and go through the information. We can add as an agenda item, discuss the types of questions we would ask Donuts and or other, you know, DPML-like providers of private RPMs, you know, what information will we like to get from them that would be useful toward our data gathering for the effectiveness and use of the Trademark Clearinghouse as an RPM? That will sort of, you know, keep us moving forward. We've given staff a lot to do. There is research to continue to address. As I'm looking at it now, we're still only on page 6. So I think we've got a lot to look at, and we can table this, give it some thoughts for next week, and come back with our concrete suggestions about what we would ask if we want, and then if we decide at that time we just don't have enough information or it's not the right time to ask these providers, you know, how they're using the Trademark Clearinghouse, then at least we have our question list and we can come back in 2 or 3 weeks and go forward there. Just a suggestion.
Good idea, Christine. This is Kathy. I think that's a great way forward, and it looks like Susan does too. So thanks for the path.
Thanks for the suggestion, Christine, and you'll see that we've copied that into the notes and action for the next meeting. So with everyone's permission, then I'll suggest we move on to we'll go back to the document, and if it takes 9 minutes, try and finish off the summary of the PNCH data. So returning to pages 4 and 5, we have the table showing the number of Sunrise launches. And unless there are any questions on that, we'll move on to page 6, which is outreach to various regions and countries. So this shows the outreach efforts versus trademarks submitted, and again covers the period of March 2013 to May 2015.
Hi, David. You've raised your hand. Question of, outreach efforts. Outreach efforts to whom? Sorry.
Kathy, thank you for that question. This, again, was taken from the staff RPM paper. It doesn't necessarily specify to whom those events were delivered, but that is definitely something we can dig into, and we'll note that in the notes.
I'd like to see if we could – I would like to ask one of the questions we've been asked from the non-commercial is whether there were outreach efforts to registrants to explain what the trademark notices were. So so if we could break down, if I could ask, were there outreach efforts to registrants? Are the outreach efforts documented by the Trademark Clearinghouse ones to trademark owners? But my guess is they are, because that's how I saw the presentations. But if so, we should clarify it in the paper, and then it would be great to know if there were outreach efforts to registrants. So, thank you.
And just to answer that question, Kathy, as you'll see from Mary's response in the chat, she says, yes, the webinars are delivered by the PNCH. And before, and Jeff.
Sorry, this is Jeff. Other than those webinars, which, I mean, I think Kathy, outreach to registrants, I mean, how could there be? Right? The Trademark Clearinghouse doesn't have contact with the registrants. They don't have registrant information. They don't have. Their role was not to do outreach to registrants. So I think what we're going to find is probably zero outreach. Most of their webinars were meant for trademark owners to get their marks into the clearinghouse. But other than that, because trademark owners registered with them, there's no mechanism by which the clearinghouse could have done outreach to, quote, registrants.
Jeff, I would agree with you. I think those webinars were directed at trademark owners, and I think we should clarify that. But I disagree with you. I think there were a million ways the Trademark Clearinghouse could have reached out to registrants to let them know what the trademark notice was and provide better information and understanding about that process. You can do it through webinars. You can do it through I Can Learn. You can do it through FAQs. I think there are a lot of ways, and in fact, they were asked to do it. So I do think here we should clarify what you just said, which is that all 100% of their outreach was to trademark registrants, trademark owners. I think we should clarify that because, and it may become a question that we ask them as well when they come. Did you do any outreach to registrants? If not, why not? And they'll probably give the response that you did. But this is kind of a question. Was there education on both sides? And it's a legitimate question. So thanks. So if we could clarify the document, ask the question, and see if there's any information publicly available or otherwise that we don't know, that would be great. But thanks for your answer too, Jeff.
Thanks for that, Kathy. So, unless there are any further questions on the outreach portion of the document, I propose to turn to section 4, which is trademark claims notices. And that's page 7.
David, can I haven't put my hand up. Is it okay to just leave it?
No, please do, Susan.
Thanks very much for finding this note about the one about the figures and the disproportionate number of notices being generated by one registrar. That was what I remembered, but couldn't remember well when we were talking about this last week. Is there any way to correct the figures that we're using to take that into account, or indeed are the figures corrected to take that into account? Because otherwise, we're trying to look at the effectiveness and impact of the claims notices, but we know that we're using data which is inaccurate due to a fault by one registrar. So is there any way to fix that, or is it fixed?
Susan, I think that Mary may well be about to respond to you in the chat on that.
Aha. I see Mary saying the final version of the staff paper is corrected. Okay, cool.
Great, thank you for that, Mary. So are there any questions?
Mary, I hear that, but it does say issue has since been corrected in terms of, like, the registrar has stopped doing what it was doing wrong. But it says, and so it is expected that the ratio of claims notices generated to names registered should decrease over time. Suggest that the figures haven't been retrospectively corrected. So we still have all of those wrongly generated notices included in our figures. And although the ratio is going to decrease over time, it still means we've got way more notices than we ought to have included in our figures that we're working from, I think, is my reading. But please tell me I'm wrong.
Again, Susan, I just responded in the chat. Kathy, you've got your hand up at the moment.
I think Susan's waiting for an answer from Mary. Or did Mary write it in the chat?
Kathy, Mary's now responded, Susan, and the way forward will be that staff will ask the analysis group for the raw numbers from which they got the 34% rate.
Great. Okay, and I wanted to link what we're looking at now to a question on the other document that we haven't gotten to yet, action item and suggestions from the subteam. David, is that okay to propose a new question for the registrars?
Yes, please, Kathy.
Okay, there's a question for the registrars, and guys, I know you don't have it in front of you. Let me read it to you, and I know we're at time, that says, gather statistics on the number of claims notices sent by registrars in light of what seems to be an unusually high number of claims versus actual registrations. And I know Susan's trying to dive into that. Thank you. The question then goes on further and says the purpose is to try to get some insights as to whether some registrars have been using checks with the Trademark Clearinghouse to develop premium pricing. I'd like to expand that the purpose is also to get some insight as to the number of registrants turning back and not registering their selected domain names and why. So we should be looking at the claims notice statistics once they're corrected or revised for both things, both registrar gaming, for lack of a better word, and registrant response and turn back, and whether and for what purpose. One of our overall charter questions has to do with chilling effect. So, David, does that make sense as an expansion of the questions for registrars on the action items and suggestions from the subteam? Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. And Susan, you've got your hand up.
Yes. I think that's right, that we're tasked with trying to determine the deterrence on infringement and also if there is a chilling effect on what would be classed as legitimate registrations. And I think perhaps the sort of claims notice question to the registrars plus the cart abandonment question was what we were hoping to be able to use to try to get further than the analysis group had got, because they acknowledged that they didn't gather data which allowed them to draw these conclusions. But I would caution against us having, notwithstanding that I think that it's a really important question about the use of the TMCH on premium pricing. I'd caution whether we're genuinely going to get any response from registrars, any data from them. If they think the reason that we're asking them for that data or the risk of providing that data is that they then are in trouble for misuse of the TMCH data. And so I guess I think we have to decide whether we think we can get useful data on the deterrence and chilling effect, and if we think we can, we perhaps have to acknowledge that we shouldn't be asking registrars for data, or we shouldn't be expecting to use the data that the registrars provide to us to then hit them with a compliance notice. I think it's fine if it's something that analysis group identified as a result of their data from the TMCH results in a compliance investigation, don't get me wrong, but I don't think we're going to get anywhere if we're expecting registrars to shop themselves.
Thank you, Susan. And Mary has just asked me to... Mary just asked me to reiterate a very similar point, which is to note that the analysis group cautions that reading too much of a correlation or causation of non-registration as a result of claims motives. So that just was the point that Susan's perhaps made. Noting that it's 5 past the hour, unless there are any further comments on pages 7 and 8, I'd propose that noting that we haven't been able to do this point 3 directly, although there are a number of additional questions, including that which Kathy has proposed, that staff will work through into a revised list of a next revision of the list of questions the PNC provides registrars and registries. I'd like to move on to point 4, item 4 on the agenda, next steps and the next meeting. So what we'd propose to do is circulate the revised list of questions by the start of next week or early next week, and ask you to provide us with some feedback on them if that's possible for the meeting on Friday. Obviously, noting that we didn't get onto this document today. But moving on to item 4, one of the issues that came up at the end of last week's meeting was about the level of participation in the meeting. And as requested by the sub-team, staff sent out a note seeking feedback from the rest of the working group about the suitability of this time on a Friday for the sub-team to meet. While there was no, in terms of the response that we received from other members of the working group, there was very little in the way of the fact that there were no requests to have an alternative time. They didn't know that that would highly inconvenience other people, and that it was just for. So therefore, we haven't really received an overwhelming request for a different time, and there doesn't seem to be any suggestion that that would improve participation if we were to move from this time. So with that in mind, I think staff would propose that we continue to stick with Fridays at 1500 UTC. Unless there are any further requests that we should look at changing this time.
Sorry, David, this is Kathy. I'm having some trouble hearing you. Did you say we're sticking with the main time because nobody really commented to suggest another time?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Yeah. Apologies. It's my portable that's having some problem. And did you say that you're thinking of sending the questions out this week, or that we're going to meet on them again next week? We'll recirculate. Okay. Thank you, Mary. Great. So we'll have at least another week or so on these questions, and lots more to consider next week. Thank you for such a substantive meeting. Thanks, everybody. And have a good weekend, everyone.